Welcome to Buzzed with Brian. I am your host, Brian. We're going to talk about beer, the history, and drinking. Hey there, beer fans. Welcome back to another episode of Buzz with Brian. Thanks for tuning in this week and every week. So happy to have you all here. I have another brewery special coming your way. I'm at Tin Roof Brewing Company in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. That's right, my trip to the South continues on strong here. Joining me on the mic is the head brewer of Tin Roof, Maria Schertz. Maria, thanks so much for taking some time out of your busy day to chat beer with me.
Of course, Brian. Thank you.
So speaking of the beer, before we get into today's episode, what are we drinking? What did you pour for us?
Alrighty, we're drinking a black pale ale. This is not out yet, but it might be by the time the podcast is released.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. We brewed this for March 8th, so International Women's Day, mm-hmm. with my homegirls from the New Orleans Pink Boots Society chapter. It's a black pale ale, so it is hop forward. We used the hop blend for Pink Boots,
okay,
which has Idaho 7, El Dorado, a third hop that I will get back to you.
That's okay. We'll cover it later.
All righty. Yeah. And but I think the special thing about it, besides the blend, is that we use some midnight wheat to it.
Okay.
So that's why the beer is black. And it is roasty, but not too roasty, mm-hmm. and not chocolatey at all, which I was kind of avoiding.
Okay.
So it is refreshing, light-bodied somewhat, and hop forward at the same time.
Beautiful. Well, I'm excited to chat more about this beer, and we'll get on to today's show.
Nice.
All right, let's get this started off. Maria, thank you so much again for joining me on the pod today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your time and excited to highlight Tin Roof in this wonderful space that we're currently sitting in. But before we get into that, let's talk about you. What has been your journey with beer and how did you end up here at Tin Roof?
Okay, it's a little bit of a long story, but I'll try and be brief.
I'm ready.
I am from Brazil, hence the accent. So okay. I started in this world homebrewing, like mm-hmm. many of us. And I did it with a group of women. So we were six women in a feminist collective called Sailor's Ruin.
Okay.
In English. Mm-hmm. And we just like to homebrew a lot and just have fun, do our thing. But we were invited to go to a lot of festivals, like homebrewing festivals, just mm-hmm. to pour our beer and have fun. And guess what? We didn't have fun. I mean, we did.
A little
sometimes.
Fun.
Sometimes,
yes.
Okay. But there was a lot of, I don't know, just like, not, you know, people were kind of rude and sometimes just like we would sense some questioning, not like genuine interest, but mm-hmm. a lot of like, well, hops did you use and what yeast strain mm-hmm. and why? And
some blah, blah, blah. Snootiness.
Yeah, like, you know, some snarky uh-huh. comments or questions because we were women. Like, we didn't see our peers getting the same treatment.
Okay.
So we were like, okay, maybe we should, you know, just be more present in those spaces. Mm-hmm. I was a journalist at the time in Brazil and I wanted to leave just because, you know, Bolsonaro was elected at the time and I really didn't want to stay during his term. So my dad is American. I have dual citizenship,
okay.
thankfully, very privileged in that sense. Mm-hmm. So I started a project, a beer blog, mm-hmm. and I wanted to research women in beer. So
very
because
cool.
of, yeah, my initial mm-hmm. project, thank you, I kind of wanted to see how women were doing in other places other than my country. So I went to Europe for 3 months, and yeah,
wow.
I traveled around, interviewed a bunch of cool people. It was really, really fun. And then I went to the States, or mm-hmm. here, came here to do the same. And I was supposed to stay for 3 months as well. And I landed in New York City and okay. kind of never left.
Just stayed. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really interesting at the time, 2019. I just fell in love with New York. I'm from a big city in Brazil, São Paulo. So it's just mm-hmm. like I'm a city girl. It was just, you know, just felt right to stay there.
Definitely.
And then COVID hit, so I could not even leave if I wanted to.
Sure.
Thankfully, I found a job before that at a very, very nice beer bar. They're unfortunately not open anymore because of COVID. The Well in Brooklyn, it was the best, like, staple for beers in Brooklyn somewhat, and I learned a lot of with a lot of people there. And then after that, I went to bartend at a brewery in Brooklyn as well called Wild East, which I'm still friends with the owners and all the everyone that works there to this day. They are excellent, excellent brewers, and they brew lager and mix from beers like no one in New York, in my opinion. And then after, but I really wanted to pursue production. So a little, like a year later, I want to say 2021, I went to Other Half Brewing Company.
Oh, sure. Just finally had some of their beer for the first time, actually.
It's lovely. Yeah. Great, great hazy IPAs.
Yes.
that's their jam for sure. And, I learned everything basically that I know there, with a lot of excellent brewers teaching me cellar work. And after that, my husband got a job here in Baton Rouge. So we relocated to Baton Rouge, where I started here at Tin Roof as a bartender. Just, you know, get my feet on the ground here.
For sure. Yeah. Kind of assess the scene and figure out what's going on.
Exactly. We are, you know, I was already kind of like, I kind of knew the bartenders here because I was visiting before moving. So it was very chill and easy to kind of start here. Super great environment. And then they needed someone to work in their cellar. And I was like, hey, I know how to do that. Excuse me. So I started in their cellar, and then I became the assistant brewer. And then later on, I became the head brewer. And here I am right now, 6 years later, first homebrewed beer with my homegirls.
Very neat. What was that? Do you remember what the very first homebrew was, style-wise?
I think it was the Gulab Gung IPA. That is a... Okay, that's a little hardcore, but that's the name of a feminist group in India that sometimes, from maybe I'm gonna misquote something here, but they're known for attacking men when they are out of line. So yeah, we're very into the Rebel Girl theme, and yeah, Bikini Kill was kind of our soundtrack all the time. So yeah, I think that was the first beer I brewed.
Very cool, very cool. I have one other question too about like some early day stuff for you. I find it really fascinating, your trip to Europe and being there for 3 months and interviewing all these women in the industry. What were some common themes or things that you kind of pulled from that experience to just to get to chat with that many people?
Yeah, so something that it seems obvious when I say it now, but that I didn't realize up until I was there, is that women in beer, they are treated pretty much as their country treats women overall. So let's say Belgium is one of the most sexist countries I've ever been in my life. And that translates into the beer scene, where it's really rare to see a woman working behind, you know, the production facility. There are some bartenders, obviously, but it's just not very common to see women in production sites in Belgium. I went to Belgium last year to the BXL Fest, and that changed a little bit from 2019, but still is very poor represented. As opposed to, let's say, Denmark, which is obviously known for their social welfare, you know, politics and whatnot. Women have, you know, the same rights as men for the vast majority of society in whatever. And I noticed that there's a lot of women in beer there. So it's interesting to kind of, you know, gauge like how the way women are portrayed in beer is the same as they're treated kind of in, you know, among their society.
For sure.
I when I went into 2019, I don't know how like it's now, but I did notice an interesting trend that I was also not expecting, of this American IPA, you know, Americanization of beer in Europe, which I was very shocked, honestly. Less in Germany, for sure, because, you know, Hoheimgebot and
whatnot. Very traditional,
Of course, but Still, like, even at the BXL, everyone wanted to try American IPAs and, you know, a lot of hopheads. And I was like, guys, we're in Belgium. What are you talking about? But interesting. I don't know. It's just like, I guess it's how, like, you know, global trends work.
Definitely.
So that was really interesting to watch, for sure.
It's like the, I guess, inverse, right? Everyone with, like, compared to fashion. Fashion starts in Europe and then moves westwardly. I guess beer starts here and moves towards Europe then.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good point, yeah. And now, I don't know, I do, at least in New York, I also see the opposite happening, where, like, everyone wants to brew German lagers or, you know.
Yes, the lager trend is here, and I love it.
Yeah. Me too. I'm a lager aficionado, but... Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see how each one is brewing each other's, beer staple.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. It's just curious to notice, that trend.
Definitely. Well, thank you for sharing that about the blog and your findings there. I think certainly that's it's great insight. And I think, yes, lots of work to be done in lots of places. And I'm glad that you're here kind of leading charge and being a head brewer at a badass brewery.
Thank you. That's flattering.
So tell me about that. Tell me about your experience at Tin Roof so far and kind of how you've, you know, fit your own mold into brewing production and the beers that you like to brew and what that kind of looks like for you in your space here.
Sure. Tin Roof is the oldest microbrewery in Louisiana. Obviously there was Abita and,
sure.
you know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of microbreweries now that are super famous and out there, but we are 13 years old. So we started here from, you know, what I've heard, there was nothing. People weren't allowed to have tap rooms in Louisiana back then.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. The state laws on craft beer are really backwards. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a lot of development on that area, but it's still a little hard to fight against macro.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we want to fight against macro, but we just want a little space.
Exactly.
Yeah, like,
you want
can
your
we,
corner of the
you know,
world.
Yeah, can I just get, like, this, you know, 5% of this cake? And it's still hard to do that. But still, Tin Roof, it's an awesome brewery that has an excellent space for events.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very known for that, for being a family-friendly, dog-friendly, you know, cool space to hang out and have good beers on a Saturday afternoon.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. My view, I think people here in Louisiana prefer drinking easy drinking beer, or, you know, obviously there is the hop craze.
Sure.
And yeah, the IPA trend is here for sure. But the overall public do like a good easy drinking lager, and that's what I try to vouch for.
Mm-hmm.
I do brew, you know, fun seasonal stuff. Like, we just released a sour IPA that I particularly think it's easy drinking. It's not that bitter. It's not that sour. So balanced and fun with blackberry and just, like, you know, people do like fun here for sure.
Yeah.
But it is for sure, culturally speaking, I think people tend to cater for the lager or the easy drinking lawnmower kind of beers, just
definitely.
Because it's super hot.
I was gonna say, I think the climate plays into
yeah
that.
It's not a stout place.
Yeah, no.
But we do brew stouts on the fall, you know. But overall, I think also the stadium LSU football culture is very into this easy drinking, you know, lager beers because of tailgating and this fun.
Oh yeah,
you know,
I've been in town for 3 days, and it was, I think, Florida versus LSU baseball, which was a top 10 matchup, I guess, and I was just, like, dumbfounded by the chaos that I saw. I mean, people
go Tigers.
Yes. People are ready to live and die by the LSU Tigers in this town.
It is, yeah. Everything is purple and yellow, and for sure we do have our flagship lager is called Bayou Bengal because of the team. Yeah. Which I think is really fun. I'm not exactly a sports fan. Football, you know, Brazilian football, obviously. But, you know, American football, I think it's fun. But I love the culture of going to, you know, the tailgate and having crushing lagers. And that's what I want to cater for
definitely.
Sure.
Definitely. Well, I appreciate that. Then I guess let's wheel back to, you mentioned some aspects of the beer in hand already, this black black pale ale.
Mm-hmm.
But what more can you tell us about this beer? I know it has, you said, the Pink Boot Society hop blend from this year in it. You've got some Midnight Wheat in here. What else? What else kind of went into the making of this beer?
I did put a bag of Munich just because I'm pretentious. No, I'm joking. It's just when I brew IPAs, I do like to do a play on kind of old world ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually dry hop this with Saaz.
Oh, Chuck Noble.
Yeah,
hop.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm funny like that. So I do love to put a little bit of, you know, a mix of both old and new world beer tradition into beers. I prefer, actually, let me rephrase that. I do like to add some old world ingredients to American IPAs or new world beers, just because I think they have a lot of interesting notes to add to it, and I don't think a lot of people do that. So from, you know, I think it's an original standpoint somehow, just to add some grassy or herbal or earthy notes to what one would expect, maybe dank or grapefruity or zest.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So this beer is, we thought the recipe to be, you know, obviously it's an American pale ale beer with a Pink Boots hop blend, but I also put some European tweaks to it.
Yeah.
So fun. I think it's fun. I think it's interesting. There's some complexity, but it's not hard to drink, you know.
Right.
It's not overwhelming. I think it's just an easy drinking dark ale. And yeah, that's what I went for. I think it's really important to mention that this was brewed in collaboration with the Pink Boots chapter here from New Orleans.
For sure.
Yeah, which I'm one of the co-leads. I'm the co-lead of education there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if everyone knows that, but the Pink Boots, you know, it's an organization for education in beer, just for women and non-binary people that want to learn a little more. And they give out scholarships.
Yep.
And it's, yeah, a very interesting organization to empower women and non-binary people that want to get into this industry, you know, and not necessarily have the means.
Mm-hmm.
So all the, not all the proceeds, I'm sorry, but we're going to donate some of our proceeds
from this beer sale.
From this beer sale to the chapter. So we can, you know, continue to invest in education and keep doing what we do, which is, yeah, empower women and non-binary people in the beer industry.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. I appreciate you sharing that. And I think that's nice that you touched on what the Pink Boot Society does as a whole. Certainly, it's been mentioned a few times on the podcast here from other guests, but for someone that's brand new jumping on today, it's some good insight for them to have. Yeah.
I'm glad I have the opportunity to share that.
Mm-hmm. So, Maria, you said education is, you know, something that's important to you. What are some other things that you like to participate in and how you like to go about, you know, educating your customer base or people that are interested in maybe joining this profession?
So this is something that started in New York. I, while I was a bartender at Wild East, this first brewery that I worked at, we noticed that there was some confusion as in to some beer styles that we would put out. Like, I don't know, like some mixed firm doubts and some people, a lot of non-beer drinkers would be like, oh, I don't like beer. And we would be like, hey, have you tried this Saison? You know, because it's a different flavor for sure. Like,
absolutely.
It doesn't taste like a German lager.
Mm-hmm.
And people would be like, oh my God, I've never had anything like that. So I kind of started noticing that the issue was more on communication and education, you know, overall of people not knowing what, I don't know, a mixed fermentation beer is.
Okay.
And working at a brewery where, you know, half of your menu is that, it's really hard. So you want people to know what that is and where it comes from and why it tastes different. So
yes.
I suggested starting something called Beer School. Pretty straightforward.
Yep.
And the owners very generously let me start this project there, and it was super fun. We would have, I think, once a month a session on a style, mm-hmm. and I would bring the history of that style, and okay. we would talk and taste. And it was just more of a cool conversation about yeah. beer, but kind of focused on non-beer drinkers, or okay. you know, we did have
the
like
very like layman person. Yeah.
Just people that if you go to a tap room and you see a menu and you feel intimidated by it, something's wrong. You know sure. what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to change this culture of, you know, people that don't necessarily know beer or drink beer that much, to be afraid of asking. Mm-hmm. And that's why I started this project. And since then, everything that I do, you know, besides brewing, is very focused on education. So when I moved here to Louisiana and I associated with the Pink Boots chapter, mm-hmm. I promptly started to, you know, an educational part of our chapter.
Yeah.
Because there's also people in the industry that would like to know more and
totally.
Don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. And being, you know, women or non-binary can be also a challenge, as in when you get a foot on the door, like when you get to participate in production, mm-hmm. there's a lot of gatekeeping.
Okay. Okay.
I went through that. A lot of people that I know went through that. That's kind of the norm, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. The Pink Boots chapter is a safe place, kind of, you know, yeah. where like anyone can ask whatever. There's no dumb questions and yeah, let's go. And I believe as a journalist that information is the key to empowerment.
Okay.
You know, that's how democracies work. That's mm-hmm. how, you know, populations or like underrepresented populations get to question their rights and whatnot. So mm-hmm. I kind of transferred that idea to beer education.
Amazing. I love
pretentiously,
that.
Pretentiously, I guess. But yeah, so now that's kind of my projects. And I do study as well, because I want to keep learning. Mm-hmm. So also very generously, I was awarded the Michael Jackson Foundation Scholarship.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, that was last year. Uh-huh. I was very, very happy about it.
Michael Jackson, and the beer person.
The beer journalist.
Yes, yeah. yeah. For full disclosure, if anyone needs that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's the best yeah. confusion there is. Yes. This is also a staple in the beer community, where if you don't know, you can also check their Instagram page and mm-hmm. all their, you know, other pages. They are a organization to empower minorities in the beer industry. Mm-hmm. So they award scholarships every year. If you are part of a minority and work in beer, I really, really think you should apply, because okay. there's a lot of options and courses and workshops mm-hmm. that you can apply, and you get a scholarship, and it's just very, very empowering.
Definitely.
So
it's a win-win
doing
for everyone.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm doing that right now. I'm at the Siebel advanced course for
wow.
the time being. Yeah.
Very neat. Okay.
It's a lot of work.
From what other people have told me, yes, it sounds like a very rigorous coursework of just you're learning a lot, doing a lot.
That's, exactly.
Yeah, it's neat.
I'm doing online, but obviously, you know, there's other courses that you can go on campus and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But still, all of that to say that I think education is the key in order to just grow mm-hmm. and do cool stuff and do original stuff and brew things that, you know, not everyone is brewing. Like mm-hmm. obviously there's talented, there's art, but there's a lot of science behind it. So
definitely mm-hmm.
you know, I want to spread this whatever knowledge I have. Mm-hmm. And it's working great so far.
That's good. I'm glad that you feel that way. I think that's it's important. You know, if you're not feeling like that, then what, you know, where is your purpose? What are you doing? So I'm glad that you have that.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy with the community that we're building. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're focused, you know, on women and non-binary people, but there's, you know, a lot of festivals and gatherings and a lot of parties and events that we can mm-hmm. see the community, and it's fun, man.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of fun involved. So thankfully, it's a great stage at the time being.
Excellent. All right. Well, my glass is empty right now. Shall we sample something else and we can
for sure
see where your education has landed you with
yes,
with
sir.
The beer? Beer number two we got here. Maria, what'd you bring us? What do we got?
Well, this is our flagship lager mm-hmm. called Bayou Bengal.
Mm-hmm.
It is, as you can, well, the listeners cannot see the label, but it has Mike the Tiger,
yes.
the mascot for mm-hmm. LSU, and it is kind of a homage mm-hmm. to, you know, our university here in Baton Rouge, and it's a very crisp, easy drinking lager. It's a 4.5% beer, so really low on the ABV, mm-hmm. light body, hopped with Saaz. As you can tell,
okay.
I like that hop.
I was gonna say there's a theme coming here.
Damn it.
That's okay. I really love a Saaz hop too.
I swear I use other hops. Yeah. Yeah, so it will be a little herbal, a little grassy, but ultimately it's a beer to be, you know, drink on a summer day, which here in Louisiana is almost every day.
I'm gonna say, I imagine it's probably like, we always joke in the Midwest, you have 9 months of winter. Down here, it's, I don't know, 9 months of summer.
Oof, yeah.
If
and
not
a
more.
Harsh one. Although we are, you know, we were graced this year, but yeah, it's usually pretty humid and hot and, you know, 95 degrees at 9 p.m. So people do like their crisp, easy drinking lagers mm-hmm. here. So that's what we aim with the Bayou Bengal lager here.
And I would say the description you gave is spot on. I would agree. I mean, it's a little bit sweet up front, but really not overly sweet, not cloyingly sweet, but just a nice malty kind of crackery effect. And the hop notes on there, I would agree. I think herbal, woody, grassy, kind of all falling into that line. I love a Saaz hop. My partner and I, we are known to enjoy a Czech style Pilsner, and I love it. Yeah, I love a Saaz hop. So this beer is hitting home for me in a lot of different ways.
That's yep. awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Czech lagers in general. Like, that's my go-to when I want to drink, you know, a crisp, clean lager.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, they are malty, but it's never overwhelming with a Czech lager. So yeah, I did kind of aim for that. A little bit,
yeah.
but I don't use lager yeast. I'm using just a 3470. You know, it's quite neutral, so it's. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm not using Czech yeast. That's what
okay.
I meant.
Gotcha. Yeah,
I am using lager yeast.
Not Czech style yeast. Okay.
I am not using a Czech lager yeast.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do admire some good Urkel yeast. They do have a harder time cleaning up diacetyl, and I, although understand the presence of diacetyl in Czech lagers,
is appropriate to an extent,
you know.
Yeah,
that's their jam, that's their thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just am very sensitive to it. So I try to use neutral lager yeast when I brew lagers in
okay.
general. So yeah, I did not use a Czech lager yeast, but I do aim for kind of that profile when it comes to the hops, for sure.
Nice. Yeah, and then for those who don't know, I mean, there's a lot of beer nerds that listen to this podcast, but diacetyl is going to give you that buttery popcorn butter type of effect, and for me, I taste it, you know. I think it's interesting. I'm curious what you say. You said you're sensitive to it. For me, it's more of like a mouthfeel thing. I get this like weird
film
mm-hmm. like creaminess, and then like the buttery either aroma or flavor, sometimes I get both, is kind of secondary. And that's kind of how I pick up diacetyl. What about you?
Well, for me, it's very aggressive to the palate, as in the buttery notes of it. I've learned, I don't even know if that's true, and I know I'm being biased during this whole episode, but I've heard that women are more sensitive to some flavors.
Okay.
Because apparently we have more palate but taste,
sure, superior to palate as a whole. We'll just say that. How about that?
All right, I don't even know if that's true, but I think it is. From a biological standpoint, there is some truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do pick up a lot of diacetyl, which it's fun to I know if you're among friends, do the test. If you, you know, are drinking a beer with a lot of diet, you're like, hey, what do you taste? What do you taste? You know, and people have different thresholds for different flavors. Some people pick up more sulfur or more, you know, oxidation and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I am very sensitive to diacetyl, and I do taste that butter, popcorn, even in small amounts. Mm-hmm. It's quite aggressive to me. Like, I had a bunch of Czech beers. I love Czech beer, so I do drink a lot of them. And even, you know, when I know that it is supposed to have that that little hint of diacetyl, yep. because that's how the strain works, the yeast strain works, even though I get, like, sorry, sound effects. But I do get a little like, let me drink this quick, because mm-hmm. the more this heats up, you know, warms up,
the more prominent it's going to become.
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. I will taste this and I don't like it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when I brew my lagers, I try and aim for a more of a neutral, clean aspect. But I also, I think it's really interesting to work with some German lager yeast as well, you know, some other strains that will give you other flavor profiles and maybe more complex and not as neutral flavors to it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I think it really depends on what you're brewing and what's your target and, you know, what your public likes. Ultimately, that's kind of what you need to brew.
True. Gotta cater to the people that want to buy the beer.
Yeah, and who's mm-hmm. your customer, you know, and what they, like, are you talking to them? Are you, you know, mm-hmm. kind of listening to feedback? Because that's who you're brewing for.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. From an ingredients sourcing standpoint, you know, you talked about using, earlier in the episode, talked about using some old world stuff for new world beer. We're talking about different yeast strains here, you know, living in, working in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Are these things that are pretty easy to come by as far as, like, if you do want a specific thing, you can kind of lock that in for your recipe?
Yeah, I feel like nowadays, especially here in the States, you know, I don't know how it works in other countries, but here you do have access to a lot of stuff. I do know that obviously droughts happen mm-hmm. quite often nowadays with climate changing and whatnot, but it's not as hard to get, you know, your hands on good malts or mm-hmm. even European malt if you'd like. There's a lot of suppliers that will have, you know, access to it, and you just, you know, ask for them to deliver to you. It's usually pretty easy like that. What I do like sometimes to play with is local ingredients. So okay. I did brew a Satsuma whip beer because mm-hmm. that's their orange, you know, that's what, yeah, they all eat during the winter. So I do like to play a lot with those, but it's more on the adjunct aspect of it.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
When it comes to malt, I do prefer to work with either American or European malt.
Okay. Very cool. We are back. Maria and I moved inside, actually. We had to vacate our area outside. It was getting a little noisy with some tent repair going on. So we're inside, and we've got another beer in front of us. Maria has been a most gracious host today. So thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
What do we have for our third beer here?
This is Perfect Tin. Oh, actually, we have two beers going on, but yeah.
Technically, yes, yeah. she's found me. I do have two beers in front of me. Yep.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Stitching. Yep. But I am going to describe this Perfect Tin, which was a anniversary release. This is one of the first beers that we brewed here at Tin Roof,
uh-huh.
and an ultimate favorite. I think people have, you know, some nostalgia surrounding this beer, so ownership asked me to brew that for our 13th anniversary, which okay. was November last year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I did change the recipe, but, you know, ultimately I brewed their first and favorite, I guess, amber ale
mm-hmm.
that is some kind of staple here in the state of Louisiana.
Yes, we were just talking about that off mic, and I find that really interesting because as my Midwesterner listeners here, No, we very much so hold the amber ale style very near and dear to our hearts. There's a lot of classic staple examples that you can find in Wisconsin, you know, whether you're going to the brewery itself or even in just dive bars. So it's kind of unique that Louisiana also has this weird affection towards an amber ale.
It is, yeah, quite of a 90s habit, I yes. would put it this way. But no, we, for those who don't know, have this huge craft brewery here called Abita, and they have one of their flagships is an amber beer. So everywhere you go, you'll see this beer around, and I just find interesting how this got into, you know, the Louisianans' kind of imaginary. So everywhere you go, you have to have an amber because people do love their ambers here.
Yeah, that's the expectation. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. You'll have, you know, a lager, maybe an IPA, and an amber for sure. So we brewed this for the anniversary, and as I was telling you, Brian, it was, you know, fun to brew. You get to play with some roasted malts or, you know, Munich or whatever amber-ish caramel malts you have.
Definitely.
But although this beer has a fun grain bill, I still thought it was a little boring, with all due respect. You know, it is a 90s beer. So I decided to dry hop with Hallertau Mittelfrüh, which goes back again into my experiment with kind of old world ingredients into the new world beer
Definitely.
Trend. Yeah. And I really like the results because it's kind of earthy, a little herbal. You said that you found some mint into it.
Yeah, I do. And I think that's what makes this beer, I am enjoying it as well, very much so. It's a distinguished beer, I think, to your comment that a lot of people, you know, an amber ale is just something to drink and it can be kind of a boring beer, but this is not a boring beer. And I do get a mintiness more from like a little bit of flavor, but more so just like this refreshing kind of menthol on the tongue, mouth cooling effect from the beer, which is something that I don't normally get out of any other beer. So like, it's really standing out to me, and I really appreciate that about this beer.
Thank you for your feedback.
Yes.
It's interesting to also hear, you know, people have different palates, and this is what it's really fun and cool about brewing as well, because you know, people have different perspectives, and one beer might taste, you know, in one way for one person and not the same way for another person. So I did get people telling me about the minty aspect of it, which I think it's really fun. I was not going for that at all.
For
but
sure.
I love that about also some old world hops, how it's kind of, because we're not drinking that all the time, I think there's a lot of unexpected flavors that come with,
absolutely,
you know, the noble hops. Yeah, you know what they are like, what they are about, but you don't see them here in the U.S. as much, obviously, as, you know, Pacific Northwest hops. So I guess whenever you have a good surprise, it's an excellent outcome.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm glad that you spoke to that, because in my mind, you know, someone says the word Citra, Mosaic, Cascade, like a lot of things come into my mind as far as like specific flavor profile and then like specific examples of beers that I've had however many times. But you're right, this is a hop that I have had, but definitely not in the same quantity. And it's fun to kind of like drink it for this time and like discover something new about it. And maybe if I have another beer that has this hop in it, maybe that expression won't be there as much, or maybe it will still be there. So I think that's a fun thing for people that drink beer for taste and just want to experience new things, that, you know, try different hop varieties that you haven't had before and keep trying them and see what you get, you know?
Yeah, I love that. And I love also test those kind of hops in, you know, beers that wouldn't get necessarily those kind of hops.
Definitely.
I got recently canceled on the internet.
Oh no.
Because no, it was actually quite funny. Someone from VinePair, my good friend Ashley Croche, published a article on like beers that brewers think that are the most overrated like styles. And I did mention that I don't like New Zealand Pilsners because I don't think that hop, you know, that kind of tropical hop flavor profile goes mm-hmm. with Pilsners,
okay.
at least here in the U.S. But I should have said that
yeah.
because Kiwis were pissed at me.
Sure.
And New Zealanders, you know, I don't know, this guy published a newsletter saying that American brewer says that New Zealand Pilsners are trash. And I was like, first of all, I'm not American.
No joke's joke. On you.
But I do love New Zealand hops, just not in Pilsners.
Yeah.
But I think the point here is there is a lot of experiment that I love and I think a lot of brewers and beer drinkers love that are not being tested all the time. And that's also what I go for a lot when I brew my beers, like to try hops that are not as common in the U.S. or not, you know, maybe expected in a certain style and test and experiment with that.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think you'll end up with a lot of very intrigued customers. And I anticipate this one, pretty tasty beer. Are you going to brew it again?
I hope. This was a small batch for the anniversary, but it did sell out really fast.
Okay, yeah.
Which was a little unexpected, although it was a Tin Roof staple. And I know a lot of people bought it just because, you know, they miss it so much. We were very pleasantly surprised on the selling, so I don't know, we might brew it again.
Okay.
I will certainly lobby for it.
Nice. All right, well then, let's move on to the last beer that you poured me here. The name of this one, very fun.
LA, not LA.
LA, not LA, yeah, so Louisiana, not Los Angeles.
Yes.
Tell me about this beer, what is that? I mean, there's definitely a reason for the name.
Yeah, that's a pun because this beer is a California common.
Mm-hmm.
This was such a weird, actually, zeitgeist happening because we decided to brew this beer and we packaged the day before Anchor Steam closed.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, what is going,
yeah.
like, oh my God. Like, we were baffled, like, with the news, you know, for those who don't know, Anchor Steam is obviously probably one of the most, you know, staples of the brewing universe. Like,
yes. I mean, they were right at the start of, like, the American craft beer revolution in California. And, I mean, the just some very highly revered styles, classic American style beer. I mean, yeah, It's a shame that they ended up having to close.
I mean, there's a reason, you know, people weren't drinking it, you know, which is really sad because for those who appreciate, you know, craft beer and for brewers, this is sometimes it was for me. I can speak for myself. Kind of an entrance door for the craft world, you know, Anchor Steam. It's, you know, I'm 33 now. So when I started drinking beer, craft beer there, and also being from Brazil, like there wasn't that many options, you know, and obviously Anchor Steam was there because they're, you know, I don't know, one of the oldest craft breweries and, you know, from the United States. That's an important remark. And that would get to my country and I loved it. And a lot of brewers that I know loved it. It's just such a traditional beer and it was just quite funny. Here we decided to brew this Cali Common and we do like to, as I said, use some European, you know, ingredients to it. So I went for the Munich 10 on this grain bill.
Okay.
I try and use Munich a lot as opposed to Crystal. I don't like how Crystal is too, when I want to achieve like somewhat of an amber-ish color.
Okay.
I know, you know, Crystal can and should be used for other styles and for some other goals if you're looking for some residual sweetness and whatnot. But whenever I can switch, I try and do that to add Munich as opposed to Crystal because I prefer the caramel notes on Munich, and I don't love residual sweetness in my beers. I prefer, if you can tell, somewhat more of a dry beer.
Definitely. Some pretty well attenuated beers that I've had today. Can confirm.
That is, yeah, that
but
is
I'm
my go
But I'm here for that, too. I like that about beers. I like that about when beers are like that, so.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we just tried, you know, a little bit of a different approach when it came to that. We did use Mountain Hood hops, so we did use traditional California common hops.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was just like the feeling of, it was, I guess, good timing, you know, releasing that beer at the time, but also kind of an emotional and sad mm-hmm. feeling of like, damn,
yeah,
this is weird. it is a homage, I guess, but not
intentionally, but no, it just ended up being that way. Yeah,
I know. But yeah, I like this beer a lot, and I love the fact that we brewed that and released that the week of those sad news. Mm-hmm. So it's quite, I'm, you know, emotionally attached to this beer somehow.
And it's good. I think you hit it on the nose with the caramel note in there. It, to me, it's like a caramel toffee kind of mixture. And then there's a pretty distinct bitterness on the end that like almost gives me like an attic-y kind of rustic-y hot feel to it. It's a really fun dynamic beer, and it's these are words maybe that don't sound very appealing, but it is a very drinkable beer. let me say that.
Thank you. Yeah. No, I love the words that you're using to describe it. Mm. It sounds elegant.
Sure. Sometimes beer can be elegant, right? Yeah.
Hopefully. But yeah, I really like that I get to brew some amber beers here, mm-hmm. speaking now just color-wise at least, because it's not something that you find everywhere, and here in Louisiana, as we were talking, it's something that people quite love and order a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun, because it's not something that I brewed a lot in my career. So that's one of the interesting also aspects of moving states and going to a place where you wouldn't expect to, you know, cater for a certain palate that you were like, oh, okay, I guess we're gonna be doing that right now. And it's just cool. It's challenging, you know,
for sure. Yeah. I mean, you get to continue to learn and grow and be challenged by your customer base. I think those are all good things and making you more, you know, prolific and diverse, you know, sort of diversified brewer, right?
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. And I love to experiment and test, and obviously, sometimes it doesn't work out, but when it does, it's super fun. Mm-hmm. And that's what I live for. Like my nerdy, you know, alchemist, chemist, like, you know, oh God, I wish I am not a science whatsoever. But my nerdy, like flavor, you know, combination, like mind
mm-hmm.
loves this kind of experiment. And so far, so good.
Right on. Well, thank you for the time today, Maria. This has been an absolute blast.
Thank you, man.
And I really appreciate the beers, so thank you so much.
Of course, anytime.
Let's ready to wrap the show up. Okay. All right, beer fans, that wraps up today's episode. Thanks for tuning in this week. This was a fun one. I really enjoyed the time. I enjoyed the beers. Maria, you were a great, great host today.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for coming.
Of course. As always, I tell people when I go to these places, great experience, great beer. Check it out for yourself. You know, whether you're listening and you're a longtime Tin Roof fan, or if you're coming to LSU for a Tigers game, traveling into town for work, whatever brings you here to Baton Rouge, make this a pit stop. Check out the beer and see for yourself. But if people can't come to the tap room, where else might they find your beers, Maria?
Well, we distro to the whole state,
okay,
Brian. Mm-hmm. So most likely you will see at least two or three brands, Voodoo, Blonde, or Biobangle,
mm-hmm.
all over, honestly, craft beer bars in Louisiana. Also some dive bars.
Cool. Nice.
And supermarkets like Rouse's mm-hmm. or Calandro's or Albertson's. These are kind of like the supermarkets in Louisiana.
Yeah. The regional chains. Nice. Mm-hmm.
This will be probably your best bet.
Cool. Right on. Well, plenty of places to find it in cans and kegs, it sounds like. That's good. All right. Well, that will do it for us here today, folks. Like I said, thanks for tuning in. I'll make a post about this episode like I do with all my episodes. So stay active on the Instagram there, the social media channels. If you want to see anything on the podcast upcoming here, feel free to shoot me a DM or write me an email at buzzwithbrian@gmail.com. Feel free to reach out to Tin Roof's social media as well. That's honestly how I made the connection. So they were responsive.
We are pretty active, yes.
Yes. So check them out. And with that, can't wait to get back on the mic again soon and enjoy another couple of beers. Maria?
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers.